Hi guys, my name is Misty and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language, from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on the AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, and I must have this thing. All right, so I have the pleasure of introducing tonight's cool cat. Check out his frog socks and his frog ties. The coolest cat in the room today. His name is David J.
Thank you. Howdy, everyone. My name is David. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And if we do an AA, my sobriety date is October 25th. October 21st, 2005. My spiritual experience is 8:45 p.m. Tuesday, October 25th, 2005. My home group at this time is the Thompson Group over in Thompson, Georgia, near Augusta. Our first meeting was September 6th, 1949. We just celebrated 73 years of continuous meetings. And my most recent service effort was taking the message into the Whitworth Women's Facility for the Hopeful Hearts group. I've been alternate GSR for a women's group. They won't let inmates out to go down to Macon. So they have to have a representative, and it's a real group there. I hope some of y'all got into AA and found recovery in prison. It's tough to do, but it can be done. And first, I'd like to thank Lisa for inviting me. If I do a good job, you thank Lisa too. If I don't do a good job, you let me know. And it's good to see everyone here tonight, willing to go to any length to do it. I think there's a football game going on tonight, isn't there?
Right now, 7-0.
If he jumps up and hollers, I said something really good. If he goes, oh, shit. Team did something bad. I'm big into service work. It's been impressed upon me since I first got sober. I'm a blackout drinker. Is there any other blackout drinkers here? Do you remember your blackouts? Do you remember after your blackouts? And that's the scary thing. So I'll go a little bit into what got me here, but a lot into service work. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I had an old-timer tell me one time, he says, David, I never had any trouble quit drinking. I quit two or three times a week. My trouble is I always started back. And that's why I need AA, that's why I need to hang out with you folks. Y'all keep me from starting back. And I've been sober since 5:30 a.m. this morning. Yesterday doesn't count, tomorrow ain't here yet, right now I'm with y'all. So, the story is we got into it, and I'll be through it. 10 till, I see the little red clock in the back. Like many of y'all, I was born at a very young age. And growing up was great. I had no trouble at all. Good childhood and all like that. But I'll tell you four things that happened when I was young. About 6 years old, I was in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. In Lawton, Oklahoma at Fort Sill. I'm an Army brat. And I was sleeping one night. And I had a nightmare. Just a voice said to me, when you die, you will be nothing. Woke up gasping prayer. And had about 40 years of fear from that night. I don't know if y'all can relate to this, but alcohol will deaden that fear. And I kept having to drink more and more and more to try to fight it off. And it's a losing battle, as we all know. So the next year, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. One day she went to the doctor, and then she went to the hospital. And she'd never been out of the house. And didn't know what to do. Walked into the room, my dad's on the telephone. I don't know, oh wait, I'll call you back. What's going on? She had some tumors on her kidney. They worked through that. I had surgery, and she did survive that. But again, more fear. Next year, I'm an Army brat. My dad was sent off to Vietnam, and we were up in Fort Riley, Kansas. And things that happened there, you'd come home from school and there'd be a whole bunch of cars over the house. So, Mom, what's going on over there? Because Mom's cooking something. She says, well, we got to take some things over to Johnny's house. Why? Johnny's daddy's not coming home. Oh. Well, his daddy's over there where my daddy is. And I don't have a dad when we've got things like Cub Scouts and all like that. One more thing. My dad did make it back. We got transferred up to Virginia, and there was a little bit of sexual abuse on me. I don't know if you'd ever call it little, but compared to other things I've heard, it wasn't horrible, but it was there. So all this stuff lays and lays and lays and weighs upon you. And then if you start drinking, it's really good. Now, I was big into sports. I got started late into drinking. But during the 20s, my 20s, drinking was great. I do remember, I'll say this, I do remember my first drink. It was in about 1970 or so. My dad handed me a beer, and I took a big swig of it, and I'll tell you right now. Beer looks and tastes like it comes from the inside of a dog. Wine isn't anything but perverted fruit juice. But liquor. Oh, liquor is fantastic. My man. You know, they say Benjamin Franklin had a saying, beer is proof that God loves his children. Alcohol is proof that God is perfect. And y'all, some of you may relate. Tequila tastes like summertime.
Yes.
Scotch tastes like fall. Bourbon tastes like winter. Gin tastes like springtime. Vodka tastes like breakfast. And rum tastes good all the time. And that was my drink. Rum and Diet Coke. But so I remember my drink. You wouldn't think I'm an alcoholic, but I would pedal up to a country store, buy some of those old Mr. Bartender boxes that you used to mix with. You may be old enough to know, but no one else. We caught my mom and let me make some peppermint ice cream topping. Cream de mint, green food coloring, and vodka. So I ate a lot of ice cream. Went off cotton, but in my 20s, drinking was great. In the 30s, some things started to happen here and there and whatnot. In my 40s, it got bad. And I'm a blackout drinker and skirted through a lot of different things. But let me just cut to the chase. July 23rd, 2005. I'd been in trouble. I'd lost a job. I'm sure it was the alcohol. My wife was going off with her friends on weekends because she couldn't stand to be around the house. My oldest son had gotten into a different church, and so he has gone a lot. My younger son was into skateboarding. And I took him over to Covington one day to a skate park. And he was inside skateboarding and all like that, and I was outside drinking out of the back of the pickup truck, going in and out and and whatnot. I don't know when we left, because as I said, I'm a blackout drinker. I can tell you that blue lights in your rearview mirror can bring you out of a blackout. And in Tolliver County, Crawfordville, on the way to Augusta, that happened. I got pulled over. I failed the field sobriety test. One sheriff's deputy cruiser took me to the courthouse. Another deputy's cruiser took my 14-year-old to the courthouse. His 18-year-old brother had to come get him, and I blew .21 and .25. They kept the .21, but three times the legal limit. So, I have two convictions. One is DUI, and the other one is child endangerment, and that's the one that really does hurt. I don't know if there's any parents in this room, but if you're frank like I did, you would be a child abuser. And that's just what this disease does to us. I can say, I will say later, that recovery does bring all that back and more. So, spent a night in the Wilkes County Jail, named for Cecil Moore. Came out and vowed never to drink again. Gave all my credit cards and money to my wife. I'm not going to buy anything. Can't buy anything. You got all the money. And that was the next 30 days was the worst 30 days of my life. Because I've never been that sober for that long recently. Things were going wrong and whatnot. And they talk about living life in life's terms being like winding a clock. That spring just gets tighter, tighter, tighter. I got a reimbursement check from the county that Wilkes County I worked for. I went out and bought all the rum I could stand. Ended up going back home, getting drunk, and wandered the neighborhood looking for my youngest son. Ended up going to bed and going to sleep. And you know, they say that God looks out for us, and I do truly believe that. I was asleep and I heard some noise, and y'all know how we wake up, right? You listen a bit, you peek open one eye. And now at the foot of the bed was my wife at the time and a uniformed officer of the Thompson Police Department standing in our bedroom at the foot of the bed. And I heard him say to my wife, "Miss Jenkins, I can't arrest him if he's asleep." So I closed my eye back. And lay there till he slept. And we can all relate, and that does show that we're in recovery, because we do admit what our past was. Well, that was more than enough for my wife. She had started divorce proceedings, kicked me out of the house, came down to the house one day to kick me out. And it just heard, she said, "David, I didn't bring Preston, my youngest son, because I didn't know if I'd find you alive or not." When I talk about child abuse, that's the kind of thing I mean. Just the wear and tear on all those from around us. So they kicked me out. Went down to Thompson Methodist Church, was crying there, praying to God, "What's going on? I don't understand." Someone from the community came in, picked me up, "You can come live with us. You got to go to AA meetings." So I started going to AA meetings. Wouldn't pick up any white chips, and I really wasn't an AA. But I was going to meetings, getting exposed to y'all. A little bit later after that, couldn't quit drinking. I was reading the big book in that little bedroom that they'd given me, drinking, getting drunk, reading the big book. They kicked me out. I ended up in Washington. Someone came in, a businessman there, one on a Monday. I told you my last drink. Well, I don't know when my last drink was. I'm a blackout drinker. I last came to October 21st, 2005, on the second floor of the Washington City Hall Annex. Got home, got through the weekend. Monday, a businessman came in. I'll throw the name out for our Wilkes County buddy out there. Henry Harris. You may remember Henry Harris. He played a big part in getting me sober. He came in and said, "When's your last drink, David?" I said, "Friday." He said, "I know, I smelled it on your breath. It's been arranged for you to go to AA." Jimmy Bowman, who's passed away, I can use his name. Jimmy Bowman will be at your house Tuesday night at 7:30. He showed up. I was physically escorted into an AA meeting. Sat down. They had a literature study that night. They called that off at a first step meeting. And at 7:45 p.m., Tuesday, October 25th, 2005, that's when I had my spiritual experience. Because I was looking at the bell and the clock was right behind me. And the spiritual experience was this, was they know. And y'all can verify this. They know what we know. See, we know what it feels like way down deep inside to have to pick up a drink when you don't want to pick up a drink because you know it's going to be bad. And that's those four horsemen. That time, watching met 7 days a week. I started going 7 days a week to AA meetings. After a while, after 6 months or so, they said, "David, we've noticed you quit crying at every meeting. Time for you to get into service work. Meet us at the jail, 6:30. I walked up there. Big Henry and Rena were there. We walked into the Wilkes County Jail, the Cecil Moore Hotel. They didn't ask for IDs or nothing. We just walked in. There were still guys there from my DUI night. And we did AA meetings. But they knew a small town what AA would do. And I'll tell you another little story. We're recording all this stuff. I was there. Ms. Louise Burt from Burt Lumber. She had her first drink at 50. She got sober at 60. I met her when she was 85. And she spent 10 more years in the meeting. So she passed away at 95, still going to AA meetings. She came in one day and said, "I bought this new Cadillac and I can't play my tapes." I said, "Well, please, Louise, maybe I can make them copy." "Okay." So she gave me a cassette tape. Checked with him. He said, "Y'all don't know what that is." She gave me a cassette tape. I burned it onto a CD. Kept a copy for myself. Gave it back to her. I said, "Well, Miss Louise, if you got any more, let me know." Well, next week she came back with a handful. All right. Copy those. A couple weeks later, she came back with two handfuls. Gave them back. Next time she had a sack. Now I'm eating ramen noodles and peanut butter. I'm having to buy this CD. I'm like, how many cassette tapes can she have? 353 cassette tapes. Now, didn't have any money, broke, going through all the stuff we do. But here were my weekends. Saturday, I'd get up. I'd do three cassette tapes in the morning, go to the noon meeting of the Washington group, do three more meetings there in Washington, or three more tapes there in Washington, then go down to Thompson. So that's eight AA meetings a day on Saturday. Sunday, I'd do six cassette tapes throughout the day. I'd go to the Wilkes Pre-Release Center, my prison, and then go to the Washington group. If you go to 16 meetings over a weekend, you're going to learn some AA. So that's what I ended up doing. So I'm sitting there working my way through, doing all the good stuff. Everyone's like, "Oh, you're exactly where you need to be. Let's see, let go and let God. This too shall pass." All that old timer speaker stuff they throw at you. But it was a February 2000, actually February 2007. So I'm over, going on 2 years sober, and I'm in the office because I don't have any heat. I'm depressed. It's February. The doctor's got me on antidepressants. All the credit card companies are after me. Work is tough. I had gotten a new pen pal. The initials of IRS. They ain't cruel, but they don't play. You take 25% for trial and support and 25% for the IRS, plus rent and blood spot, you're lucky to get ramen noodles and peanut butter. So I'm sitting there all kind of depressed. You know, because good things are happening, but I'm in the middle of getting well, and I don't realize it. And, you know, I mentioned I had two sons. After that DUI, they both wrote me letters. One I managed to keep, the other my youngest son took back. And so this has been edited for singleness of purpose tonight, but here's the letter my oldest son left me. Dear Mom and David, it wasn't Dan. I don't know how long it will be before I come home. It may be 2 days or 2 weeks. I don't know. But even if I do come home, I won't be talking to either of you until I can trust you. David, I'm not being judgmental. Everyone knows you're a drunk. It's not something I judge. It's just something I know. Being a drunk is not only bad in a biblical stance, but a worldly stance as well. So it has nothing to do with what church I go to. You can go ask Tom Kerr if alcoholism is okay, and he'll say no. Even how you're trying to blame this on me by calling me judgmental instead of owning up to your problems. How can I not refer to the past in this situation? Every other time you said you'll stop, it is a lie. Those who don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it. I'm tired of repeating this crap. Also, how dare you laugh in my face after I spilled my heart to you? I know why. You know that you've been able to once again to force your rules and plans to get your way. No matter what I said last night, you knew that in the end you would get your way. You don't care what you've done to the rest of us. I've had to play dad in this family for too long, and you are in no way, shape, or form in any state to take that position away from me. You are a spoiled little kid who, after throwing a tantrum, gets his way. These tantrums have been ignored for too long. It's funny that you are the most active person in the Methodist side of our family, and you do everything that a Christian should. Is it because you think that going to church more will cover it up? Because it won't. And I would say that's a pretty honest letter. On February 23rd, I sent in that office and worried about the IRS, this, that, and the other, but my two boys were the biggest thing. And, you know, what I've learned is that, you know, I say God's a perfect gentleman. He won't go anywhere unless he's asked. I've heard an old-timer say, the one word that best describes God is lonely, because there's not enough relationships between us. And, you know, that day I was sitting at my computer and just said a little prayer. God, something. Just give me something. And a couple hours later, I guess, somewhere over in Memphis, Tennessee, where my son was going to preacher school, he sent an email, and my computer went ding, and this is what I read. Hey, Dad. I love you and appreciate everything you've done in the past year. I was once terrified that I had lost my father, and now that fear is gone. I can't put into words all that you mean to me and how much I love you. You are my role model, and I can't wait to have children, hoping I can be half a man that you are. I'm proud to be your son, and I love you. Your son, Carl. So that's what AA has given me. It's also given me the ability to be in the game. My youngest son went off to college. I was chairing a meeting one night. My phone went off. I looked at it and went, the mother of my children. That's probably not good. She never calls for anything good. And I was right. Our youngest son had been arrested for armed robbery. I don't know if anyone in here has gone through the legal system, but that's one of the seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm. 10 years straight up. Went down that night trying to figure out what was going on. It's over in Milledgeville. Next day, trying to bail him out. Mother of my children couldn't get the bail money together. I walked down to the Farmers Bank in Washington, said, I need $3,000. And they cut me a check. We drove to Milledgeville. I handed $2,000 to the bail bondsman and $1,000 to the attorney. We walked out with my son. Washington's a small town. They know everybody's business. I went to the attorney and he said, well, Mr. and Mrs. Jenkins, you're good parents. You raised your son to tell the truth. And he did. In my profession as an attorney, we call that a confession. We're good at what we do. The retainer will be $10,000. So we're scrambling to get the $10,000. My brother ended up giving me his life savings at the time because I wasn't drinking anymore. We got the money together and writing letters and things like that. He actually pled out to first offender aggravated assault. So he spent 90 days in jail and prison, 5 years probation. If folks say probation is a light gig, just slap them for me. It ain't. But I was there for my youngest son. So, a couple of things. I believe in audience participation. So this is going to help. I've done a lot of work in prison. Told you I've been down and spent 10 years in women's prisons. And guys, if you want to learn about women, take AA meetings to a women's prison. You'll learn about women all right. But we were having two things right quick. In a meeting one Sunday, we had 45 women in the meeting, and a lady on the right corner front row never said a word. She'd come in, she had the big book, she had the 12 and 12, had the daily reflection. She'd put it on her lap, cross her hands, bow her head, we'd do the meeting, she'd get up, set it down in the chair, hold hands to the left. No one heard a word from her for a year. In fact, Sunday, we said, does anyone have anything affecting their sobriety or heavy on their heart? She raised her hand and said, I do. And everyone, you know, neck bones cracking to look at her. She said, well, I just wanted to let y'all know, I haven't seen my son in over 4 years. And he came to see me today. We've been talking on the phone lately. You know, I've written him some letters, and we've been talking on the phone, and he came to see me today. And I didn't know what to talk to him about. And finally, I couldn't stand it anymore, and I said, son, why are you here? And he bowed his head and looked back up at her and said, well, Mom, since you've been going to those A&A meetings, you sound different. And some of y'all probably have gone through that yourself. So, that's the inspirational moment there. But we also had a prison riot there one time. Someone was talking about their AA experiences and said blah, blah, blah. And someone on the other side of the room says, oh, that's gross. How could you do something so nasty? And she said, let me tell you. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let me reel everyone in. Let's talk through this. So, we had a good discussion about that topic. That got me going, though. I'm just doing this. It's a fifth step type thing, but if you've done any of these, raise your hand. You might be able to help somebody else. So the topic was the worst place to ever come out of a blackout. Hospital did not make the list. So the top 10 reasons. Number 17. Now, I said top 10, but I call it. I kind of sort of maybe someday might obey the rules. Plus, there's so many good places to come out of a blackout. Number 17, in a dumpster. No. I almost started a riot. Number 16, while talking on a cell phone. Who are you? Number 15, while in an aerial dogfight. We have a lot of Air Force pilots, and you'd be surprised. Number 14, while performing heart surgery. Putting it in or taking it out. 13, y'all get ready. With the police tapping on your car window. Number 12, during a debate. Number 11, walking off of an airliner. You don't know what country you're in. Number 10, showing off a bad tattoo. Number 9, confessing to your P.O. David, tell me again where you hid that cocaine. Number 8, while skydiving. Number 7, during a police chase on the interstate. We're going to talk. And then, of course, number 6, during the police interrogation. Number 5, giving a funeral eulogy. I'm learning so much. Number 4, naked on your parents' front lawn. I love this group. Number 3, testifying in court. Mr. Jenkins, tell the jury again where that cocaine is hidden. Number 2, during a wedding. During your wedding. And the number 1 worst time to come out of a blackout. During sex. I love working with professionals. So I've got about 5 minutes or so. What I've been taught in my sobriety is always to be looking for God. You know, we talked about this in my home group, like conscious contact with God. God is like a mother of a little child playing hide and seek. The mom always hides where she can be found. And the same thing with God. We just have to be looking. So, the top 10 alcoholism movies. Oh, these are good. Number 10, Clean and Sober. So if you haven't seen these, you need to watch them. Number 9, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. Number 8, The Lost Weekend. Back in the 40s, it won an Academy Award. They did the pre-screening, and it was so raw, such a raw description of alcoholism, that they almost didn't show the movie, and it won an Academy Award. Number 7, Days of Wine and Roses. Number 6, You Killed Me. It's about a Polish hitman who can't kill people because he's drunk. So he goes to AA so he can start killing people again. Number 5, My Name is Bill W. Number 4, 28 Days. Number 3, Pay It Forward. Number 2, When a Man Loves a Woman. And the number 1 top alcoholism movie of all time, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Now, let me just do a 5-minute synopsis of that movie. Starts out, the Grinch is all alone. All he's got is his dog, and he's abusing the dog. And he's looking down on the rest of the folks in Whoville, planning bad things about them, got a resentment about everyone in town. Just down on them, and comes up with a plan to get even. Sound familiar yet? So he comes up with his plan, and he starts off down to Whoville to do all the stuff, and then they break for the commercial. But you know, right before they break, they have the song. You're a mean one. I can't sing, so bear with me. But in that song, there's the line, the king of sinful socks. And what is a sock? 1950s word for drunk. So they tell you in the movie he's a drunk. Mm-hmm.
I thought Jim Carrey was just a drunk in general.
Well, this is the original Grinch. So, he just down there and he's going through the houses, right? Stealing all the stuff. And then who shows up? little Cindy Lou Who, who's no more than two. And she has the little questions. Why, Santa Claus? Why? Why are you taking our Christmas tree? Why? And if you are in this room, you probably heard something like that. Why, honey? Why? Why, son? Why? Why do you drink like you do? Why? And just like the Grinch, we thought up a lie and we thought it up quick. Well, it's my job. It's you. It's the kids. It's whatever. It's certainly not me. And we do a good job of convincing folks. So Cindy Lou Who goes back to bed. And, the Grinch steals everything. Takes it up to the top of the mountain. And you remember at the beginning of the movie, his heart was too small. Right? And what we have here in this fellowship is the language of the heart. So he's sitting there, and the Grinch has a spiritual experience. And his heart grows three sizes that day. You remember, he blows out the little box around his heart. Then he gets a tear in his eye. And then all the toys start to go over the cliff. And he gets the strength of 10 Grinches plus 2, which is how many? 12. I've heard that number somewhere. And then, after the spiritual experience, he immediately has a program of action. He goes back down into the village and returns every toy and makes amends. And then if you listen, I don't have it memorized yet, but if you listen to the song at the end of the cartoon, the session, you'll hear people talking about we, which is exactly what we have here tonight. So that's part of what I've learned from being in this fellowship, is always be on the lookout for God, because God is hanging around all over the place right now. Right now I've had a lot of other things. Up at Whitworth Women's Facility, doing an AA meeting, two ladies with me, whatnot. We're going on and on and on, and we're getting in. I'm getting feelings. I fell in love in a women's prison to another AA member, outside member. Longer story there, but I did do it right. Had to talk to my sponsor and had me two or three other sponsors or whatnot. And so, how many folks in here have been in the prison? All right. If you don't have money on the books, Christmas is a darn lonely time. And it just so happened, 2013, we met on Tuesday nights. December 24th, 2013 was a Tuesday night, our regular meeting night. We had gotten together with the warden, so we took in all kind of goodies, canned drinks and chocolate bars and granola and all that stuff, and we had a graduation party. Then after that, it's tough to, believe it or not, it's tough to get into prison if you're fine upstanding folks. We couldn't get anyone to give up their Christmas Eve to come speak, so Kim and I spoke at that meeting. I went first, she went next, and I had a reserve 5 minutes after that. And on December 24th, 2013, from an AA podium in the Whitworth Women's Facility, I proposed to Kim. And she started to get up. She's on that side. And I said, sit down. And I went over and got down on one knee. Now, I didn't feel comfortable smuggling a diamond engagement ring into a women's prison. But I had made one out of aluminum foil. And so I gave that to her. I did have one out in the car. We've had a great times ever since. Some challenging times and whatnot. But we're still together. We're still doing the best we can together. And we're still all involved in AA. So, given on that high note, it's about 10 till. I made a promise. And I'll keep it. Looking forward to talking to some of y'all. You, I know I'm talking to you after the meeting, because I want to learn a lot. Thank you for being here for me tonight. Is that our pastor?
Told you he was a cool cat, didn't I?
Was the last thing I wanted to do. There ain't no denying the pain you put me through. I thought I knew you so well. Guess I have to blame myself for letting you burn me till I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole in my soul. Got tired, wound up, burned out. Devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Sweet talking, heartbreaker, you had me believe that you loved me, but you gave me one match and gasoline. It all happened so fast, nothing was left but ashes. I should have seen it coming, but I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. There are lessons I'm still learning. Hearts I've broken are still hurting. Bridges that will keep on burning. And it's all because of you. Things you made me do. I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. Devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Oh, running from the fire. Right. Head down, hellbound, digging that hole.
Hey everybody, I'm Tim, an alcoholic. Tim Lord, this is Tim M. He's Tim 1, not Tim 2. And he's my sponsor. And